On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. Today on our show, we're going to talk about justice under tyranny, an interview in person with Joey Lynn Maceros, sued over the Biden bus versus Trump train incident. I'll tell you all about that. And Texas Attorney General Paxton impeachment travesty. And of course, I'll tell you why these stories matter to you at the very end of our show. But starting today on this justice under tyranny, I just want to make this point in the first five today. There was a great piece out on American greatness by the wonderful author Julie Kelly, who's been chronicling everything happening in Washington arising out of the January 6th protest in Washington, D.C., the January 6th, 2021 protest. She's been chronicling the cases, the individuals, the facts, the stories, the judges, the juries, just all sorts of information. And she called out recently in this column that I urge you to look at. In fact, anything I talk about in the show, you can read the columns yourself. I link the columns on our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. Her column basically today was about all of the violence that occurred in Washington, D.C., violence at the hands of the Black Lives Matter protesters during the course of 2020, which was, of course, President Trump's last year fully in office and part of the year that there was so much violence in the around the country, really, arising out of the George Floyd incident. The Black Lives Matter protests went completely wild. And there were very, very few prosecutions. And as I've mentioned before in this show, when you will see headlines on some places online saying, oh no, there are many, many arrests, it's important to understand part of what occurred was arrests did happen, but prosecutors didn't prosecute. They let the people go with nothing. And so the arrests were almost seem like, I don't know, a subterfuge. But in any case, what Julie Kelly is bringing up was how even within Washington, D.C., there was a promise that the local authorities, the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, his name is Matthew Graves, promised, you know, justice for all, same justice for everybody. But she goes through and talks about how he, this District of Columbia U.S. Attorney, Matthew Graves, was questioned by Congressman Paul Gosar from Arizona, basically saying, how can you treat these two categories of people so differently, the January 6th protesters, January 6th, 2021, versus the protesters, the Black Lives Matter protests, and literally in the case of the alleged Capitol siege, January 6th, 2021, Graves has initiated through his office, the DOJ's office, 1,000 prosecutions, over 1,000, and has promised more than 1,000 more. In fact, but when you look back at the rioting that happened, the Black Lives Matter rioting that happened in Washington, D.C., a big episode happened in Washington, May 29, 2020. Which should be 3 years ago yesterday. 3 years ago yesterday. The point of bringing this up is, and Julie Kelly's article is making the point, that basically nothing happened to pretty much anyone who engaged in those protests, including the people who burned down part of St. John's Church, who were so violent on the grounds of the White House that the president and the family had to be shuffled off to a safe location. She runs through the many other protests that occurred in Washington, endangering our elected officials, very violent, destructive of property, destroying statues, making the point that when the justice system looks at people who are protesting and they're on the left, there's just a very different standard applied than to people who are supporters of the conservative view of life. As she describes, rage-filled activists, heart of the nation's capital throughout that year, 2020, and basically nothing happened. And in addition to what she points out in this article, other times she has pointed out, and I point out in this show too, how in America, in addition to the fact that the DOJ makes a decision at the federal level, whom to prosecute and for how much, there's also, and it appears, a complicity or a sympathy with the DOJ, with the anti-American left in this country. But there's also a problem with the judges, federal court judges, appointed, whichever side they're appointed by, but mostly appointed by the left, where they seem oblivious to the inequities in our justice system. You don't see federal district court judges hearing these trials in Washington commenting. In fact, it was so rare because one judge one time in one of the January 6th trials did comment about the amazing distinction between people prosecuted over their involvement in the January 6th protests versus people involved in other protests around the country that were BLM, that were leftists, and just kind of saying there's a pretty big difference here. But you don't see many of those judges taking into account that really massive difference in treatment by our justice system. And it causes more and more Americans to start to worry that we have a two-tiered justice system. I want to compound that point in the first five with another point I've talked about many times on this show, but it really matters to keep in mind. In addition to just a shift in the apparent determination of the federal government, the Department of Justice, to go after political opponents, political opposition, and to treat them very differently than they do people who support the left, there's also this disinformation mindset I wanted to talk about briefly today, because it really ties into how we treat and how we think about many instances in America. So we had, as you likely recall, under President Biden, he who occupies the White House, Biden, we had the Department of Homeland Security actually unabashedly announced we have a new division, the Department of Disinformation. And it was a Disinformation Governance Board. And they actually said it with a straight face, apparently not anticipating the huge pushback they got from the American people saying, it's not your job. It is not your job to decide what truth is. And what is so amazing, why I want to bring it up again today, because new things have happened along those lines, it is like it never occurred to the Biden administration, to the Department of Homeland Security, to the new Disinformation Governance Board. It never apparently occurred to them that this isn't really the government's job to decide what truth is. And so they know, because so many people have read 1984, and they know George Orwell's book, and the whole, his fictional book, or prescient book, was about the idea of, you know, he had the Ministry of Truth, which people started making reference to the Biden administration setting up a modern day Ministry of Truth. But it's like it never occurred to them that the American people would not accept the idea that the government gets to decide what is true. The government gets to decide narrative, decide facts, and you, the American people, are to be viewed as suspect if you won't agree with them. The Department of Homeland Security was equally culpable. They did this early on, within a couple of weeks of the Biden inauguration, where they announced that they were going to treat people who questioned the outcome of the 2020 election, which at this point is over half of America. But if you even question the 2020 election, you might be guilty of being a domestic terrorist. Later, that same agency, DHS, put out another department bulletin announcing if you disagree with the government's view on election fraud, on the efficacy of the COVID vaccines, on the availability of other treatments that are effective for COVID, you also might be considered domestic terrorists. The mindset that the government in America is supposed to have is a robust defense of the First Amendment. The concept that in America, a foundational idea of America is you have the right, freedom of speech, which naturally includes freedom of thought. You're allowed to disagree with the government, to hold views that the government does not agree with. Because they don't want you to think you have that, and the government can't actually say, you know, we don't anymore tolerate people who don't agree with us, they've coined these phrases of disinformation or misinformation or malinformation, and all they really really mean is if we give a different label to the kind of language people use when they don't agree with us, maybe you American people will be duped and you won't recognize that we're taking away your freedom of speech. That's exactly what they're doing. So this article I mentioned, I also want to draw to your attention. It's at our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. It's from the Gatestone Institute website, and it's actually from a very recent article talking about the continued effort of the Biden administration to hold itself out as the decider of what the American people must think, what you must believe, what you must see as true. So they had the Department of Homeland Security had to retract and say, okay, never mind, we were just kidding about that government disinformation board. But all they really did, literally within a space of a month, they created a new disinformation office, only they called it Foreign Malign Influence Center. It operates out of the DNI, the Office of Director of National Intelligence. So DNI now has the Foreign Malign Influence Center, which is not really about foreign. It's about anyone who expresses disagreement with any of the narratives that the left cares about, what they want you to say and think is true. There's also a bill pending in Congress right now. Democrat Senator Michael Bennett proposed a bill that would create a federal digital platform commission. Again, the mission of this commission, oh, that's kind of a cool phrase. The mission of this commission is to decide. They're going to promulgate rules and talk about civil penalties and hearings and conduct investigations. If you put things online that the government is deciding you must view as misinformation, disinformation, malinformation, which can, of course, include anything they don't want you talking about, which probably includes a lot of things about Hunter Biden, certainly includes things about COVID and the source of COVID and the way the government treated the COVID episode. It wasn't even a pandemic. You look back at it, it was an episode in American history. You have all sorts of places where the American people are being told, don't go there, don't think that, don't say that. It goes on and on. In fact, this article makes reference to this being very similar to an American KGB or a Stasi or the CCP. They're empowered to tell the American people not only what you must think and say, but if you really go along with it, you just might be in trouble. Essentially, they're trying to shape Americans' thought on every issue, so you pretty much become nothing like what the founders intended, a society full of people who are just embrace freedom of speech, embrace the idea that we have the right to learn for ourselves, to read our sources, to understand what we understand to be truth, and to speak it, and to say it, and to think it. Last thing in the first five is, which I know I've gone over five, but this happens. Anyway, what I want to say was, there was a statement attributed to William Casey, then CIA director, way back under Reagan in 1987, where he made a comment which was reported by Barbara Honegger, who was present at the White House in a meeting at the Roosevelt Room in the West Wing of the White House in February of 1981, at which William Casey, then CIA director, is reported to have said, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." Now, I'm not, you know, this was a Casey statement that was reported at the time and spread around at the time. No denial ever came out of anyone at that meeting that was not said. But I'll close up really by saying this. The government effort to shape what you think and believe about a whole host of issues is really, it's part of what happened under COVID. It's part of what happens on many other issues. You're kind of being told, believe the government narrative and don't listen to all these people who say other things. And the narrative isn't just about issues. It isn't just about thinking how you think about an issue or a policy. It's what you think about episodes, events, circumstances in history. So right now you have many people in Washington still trying to convince you that the January 6th protest was an insurrection, which it wasn't, and they know it, and we know it, and we know they know it, and they know we know it, but they still keep on talking about it and keep on prosecuting as though it was. And the danger of all this is you eventually lose the precious concept in the First Amendment to the Constitution, the right of free speech, which includes the right to think and believe and speak as you do, as you believe. That, my very fine friends, is my very long first five. So we have joining us in studio a guest whom I just met a couple weeks ago. Her name is Joey Lynn Massaros. She's a Texan, and she's from an area called New Braunfels. And she is she's a defendant in a lawsuit that was brought by people who were riding on the Biden bus This was during a campaign when Joe Biden brought a, he wasn't on the bus, but there were people on his campaign driving around a bus around the highways of Texas during the campaign. And there was a protest surrounding that Biden bus, which people affectionately call the Trump train. So she was part of that and is now a defendant in a very expensive lawsuit we're going to hear much more about right now. So welcome to the show, Joy Lynn.
Hey, Debbie, thank you so much for having me on. Man, that intro on our free speech rights that are under attack couldn't be more relevant.
I could not agree more. It is truly amazing, truly amazing. And, you know, one thing that happens, I do want to get into your story, but one thing that happens with that whole, we've set the narrative, we've told you what to believe, this is what you're supposed to say is true, is that people get a little bit hesitant, not just whether I should say this in public in a protest, but even in personal conversations. You know, I think that Trump really won the election in 2020. I think that the COVID vaccines are dangerous. I think that there were plenty. I mean, the things you would like to say, it stifles conversation. Anyway, I think you know that. We'll get to that in a minute. So just tell us what happened. This is back in October of 2020. And so we're just a little month, basically a month away from the election, and you got involved in a protest, a Trump train in the New Braunfels area in Texas as the Biden bus rode through. So what happened?
Yeah, so we learned very last minute that day that the Biden-Harris campaign bus was driving through our town on a major thoroughfare, and we had seen on social media that day that other people in other cities were driving in their Trump trains with Trump flags next to the bus, and it looked fun. It looked like a great photo op. Maybe we could get President Trump's attention and see his reaction to our support for him and just encourage other people to get out and to do the same thing. It's kind of like you wear your favorite jersey to your sports team's game, right? And then the opposing team wears their jersey and may the best man win. And so it's shocking, and not really shocking at all, that we would be getting sued for our exercise of free speech while existing in the same space with the Biden-Harris campaign bus that day. But the bus just drove through New Braunfels, and we drove alongside of it showing our support for President Trump, and now it's cost us everything.
Okay, I that's a great summary. And so when I say Trump train, yeah, it became a really popular term, but it's basically referring to people who have Trump flags or Trump banners, whatever it is, on their cars. That's what Trump train means.
Yes, we were seeing that all over in 2020, whether that was on a boat, in the water, on land, on vehicles. There were miles long in the media, right? And our town specifically was on the map on national news for having a Trump train that had over 4,000 members. And so it's no surprise to me that we were on their radar when they drove through town.
And also, to back up a bit, you mentioned before the show started, we were talking, that you've not been super political active up until that point in your life. Yeah. But you had, during this campaign, decided for a bunch of reasons that you supported Trump. Mm-hmm. But your Trump train, putting signs in your car, flags in your car, this was something you'd done in New Braunfels even before the Biden bus came through.
Yeah, so for about 3 weeks, we had been parading through town. Certain days during the week and evenings, there would be a time and a route we drive through our town. And all throughout the town, people in their lawn chairs with their kids would have pom-poms and signs and flags, and we'd drive by. And it was just a really good time. So for us to already have the flags in our vehicles and to do another Trump train parade wasn't out of the ordinary at that time. And we were seeing it all over the nation.
Okay, so, you know, I was picturing you're talking about it, about like a July 4th parade.
Yes.
Where it was like that. People, they set line the kids up, their little folding mm-hmm. chairs, they're waving flags. Mm-hmm. That's what you're talking about, that
absolutely,
kind of thing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Very peaceful on our end, and we would always pray before we went out. We would agree that, because we received a lot of hate from opposing viewpoints. People would throw drinks at us, people would flip us off, scream curse words, you know. There was all kinds of issues, and we would always agree, we are not going to engage. We are only going to wave back. We are going to smile and wave, and we are not going to engage in that kind of behavior. And so, of course, we're getting sued for exercising free speech when we never, ever engaged in that kind of behavior back.
I love that. So getting back to the day in question, October 30th, 2020, mm-hmm. I also hadn't realized the Biden bus, I mean, you saw this, you know, was their way of, I guess, kind of their way of campaigning in Texas. I think they were very clear they never thought they would win Texas, but yes, they had some presence here. So they were driving a bus with Biden flags and signs on it from South Texas, somewhere near the border,
yes,
all the way up on major freeways, all the way up to Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And so you became aware that in cities, even prior to them making it to New Braunfels,
correct,
these people had ridden along the side of the buses and been, whatever they're doing, honking, waving Trump signs.
Yes. Yes, that's true. We had seen it on social media and we're like, wow, that looks like so much fun. Maybe we could actually make the news. We could get Trump's attention. And we certainly did. He tweeted a clip of the video through our town and said, I love Texas. And it was the coolest thing. We were like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to tell my grandkids one day. I never thought in a million years I'd also have to be telling them about a federal level civil lawsuit.
Yeah. Okay. So that to make, yeah, I want to get to that now. So you rode along. This is near Brew Braunfels, John, a major thoroughfare, major highway. Rode along next, got the Biden bus, and actually they had police escort.
They right? did. Through our town, they did have a police escort. Absolutely. And they made a statement that everything was safe and in order.
The police did.
They did.
So you're going through your town, which has a major freeway there, mm-hmm. police front and back, bus rolling along, you all, your Trump train. Rode next to them, and you basically had what was on your car?
Yeah, so we had a Trump 2020 flag, American flag, a Texas flag, and there would have been a fourth flag. It may have been a come and take it flag. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, we in Texas love that come and take it flag.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes.
So you rode along, and then during the course of time you were there next to the bus, was there any you didn't bump into the bus? No bumping each other.
No, Debbie, despite the narrative of mainstream media that says we tried to run the bus off the road or did run the bus off the road, that absolutely never happened. The bus was never impacted. It drove until it decided to stop in Austin, Texas. There are other narratives that the bus tried to exit, but we blocked it or created a barricade with our vehicles. Anybody with eyes that watches the videos of what happened that day can see that that's certainly not the case.
Yeah, that's what I want to make sure. So yeah. There was no blocking their egress.
No.
There was no getting in front of them and slowing down, endangering it. It was just a ride next to them and tell them this is who we are in Texas.
It absolutely was. It was our right to be there on a road as Texans we pay taxes to drive on. The bus was predominantly in the right-hand lane, so if at any time it wanted to exit, it certainly could have. But it did choose on its own accord to drive all the way to the left lane, back to the right lane, back to the left lane, and swerve in and out of traffic. And your viewers probably remember this viral video from 2020. And there was a white car following the Biden bus, and it hit a truck with a Trump flag. And that's where the narrative came from, that we were trying to run the bus off the road because mainstream media only showed a clip of a cell phone recording of that incident, of that truck pushing the car back in a defensive manner, but implying that the truck started the accident, which in fact didn't happen. However, I did not see that happen that day. That was not our vehicle. I'm just aware of that.
Okay, that is going to make it clear. This wasn't you or anyone.
No.
It wasn't your little Trump train segment. It wasn't you guys. It wasn't you.
I have no idea at what point that happened. I was not privy to it. I didn't see it. I learned about it way after. But I do have video footage from the witness that took it that we will be using in court to prove that the Biden staffer, in fact, caused the accident and it was not Trump supporters.
And this wasn't the bus. This was a follow
correct.
Vehicle or whatever
That's
it was.
Correct. Although Biden said in a press release that we tried to run the bus off the road. And then people like on The View were saying that we were emboldened racist bigots crawling out from under our rocks to do that.
Yeah.
And how could you vote for Trump?
Why don't you sue them for defamation?
I would love to.
They probably deserve it. Anyway, so in Boston, just be clear, because I was going to this viral video.
Correct.
People saw, wow, you know, this protest got out of control because it looked like the Trump supporters just bumped into a Biden. It wasn't the big bus. It was a follow-on vehicle with a Biden staffer inside. But you're saying what you saw, you didn't see it all that day, but
correct.
Later the video you saw showed
correct.
It was actually the Biden staffer.
From the video that I saw, and I did personally see the bus weaving in and out of traffic, and I have a
okay.
photo on my phone of the bus taking up three lanes with that white car because they were swerving in and out of traffic. And so I did not see the accident. I saw the bus driving sporadically, and I have seen the video with my own eyes, and it is very clear and evident. The white car exited its lane while swerving
the
with the bus.
White car, Biden
The Biden
driven.
Staffer hit a truck with the Trump flag. Yes, ma'am.
And then the Trump supporter
barely pushed it back
okay.
and maintained defensive driving, in my opinion.
But this had nothing to do with you, your
not
presence.
Not at all. No, but they're using this in the lawsuit, claiming that we had a premeditated plan of assault to run the bus off the road.
Oh, yeah.
So they are lying about this and fabricating this story, yet they have no proof or evidence to substantiate these claims against us.
Okay, so just to be clear, this is not a criminal prosecution, not
correct.
The DOJ, but it is the power of using lawsuits to, I mean, is certainly to threaten people like mm-hmm. you who are exercising your free speech, and also eventually to diminish your financial capacity to function. I mean, because it's expensive, yeah. obviously, to defend against a lawsuit. So this happened October 2020. When did you first learn that you were going to be sued by people on the bus that day?
Yes, you're right. It is not the DOJ. It's not criminal. It is civil. These are very powerful and well-resourced, unlimited resource individuals suing us as average Americans individually in court under the Ku Klux Klan law. I learned about it 8 months later from a friend who saw it on CNN.
Hello, I'm Dr. Hochsi. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
This was made possible by Brighteon.com. After being deplatformed by YouTube, I built Brighteon.com so that we can speak. All voices of dissent are welcome. Join Brighteon.com now. Post your videos today and start building an audience there where you will not be censored. Brighteon.com.
I feel that Juvent is helping me to get better every day in every way.
That impact is what has been shown to help improve your bone density. Without that impact, you're missing a very important nutrient in your physical conditioning program.
The Juvent Micro Impact System allows the person to create more joint range of motion. Now I know there's a chance that nourishment can take place to that joint.
But not just this issue, but the concept, you're allowed to disagree with the government and you're allowed to say things that the government doesn't agree with, and they're not supposed to make your life miserable.
And Debbie, on my last word, I'm sorry, I know you keep trying to close this segment. One more thing.
Well, I've got to talk about Ken Paxton.
I know. It's important. We understand that this being brought as a civil rights matter at the federal level has the potential to impact every American if they win, and it sets a legal precedent. This is not just a sad story about our family. This impacts every single American, whether we agree or disagree. And so we feel like we are called to defend free speech. And so we really do need the help of every American, whether that's $5, your Monday morning coffee, if you could contribute that to our fight, or maybe you have more. But we believe that if we can win this, then we can be that resource that helps other people when their free speech is under attack, since we have not been able to find that. So hopefully we will win this. We will recuperate the legal expenses we spent, and we will be able to start a fund to help other Americans. And so freespeechdefender.com hopefully is just the beginning.
Thank you very much for all that you just said. And it is very true. Harking back to my first five, you know, this is a pushback against all that the left is doing in this country. This destruction of the First Amendment promise of free speech, this concept that they'll decide, disinformation, malinformation, misinformation. We dictate what truth is, and you all, you peasants out there, you just nod and bow. So I'm grateful for all that you are doing too, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, my very fine friends, I'm going to guess a lot of you tuned in today thinking, I bet the very first thing she's going to talk about is the Texas Attorney General, Ken Paxton, being impeached by the Texas House over the weekend. And I'm going to dedicate a great segment of my show tomorrow, Wednesday, to far more detail, but I do want to begin the discussion today on this show. So yes, it is true, the Texas Attorney General was faced with articles of impeachment in the Texas House, and they did vote to impeach him. And this is very similar to the federal level, where the U.S. House, or in this case, Texas House, does the impeachment vote. You don't present evidence. It is kind of like what the grand jury does in a criminal prosecution. So you have the impeachment vote, and then if they decide to impeach, then the legal process calls for the matter to move from the House to the Senate. And just like when Trump went through it in Washington, the Senate then has the obligation to hold a trial. And it's more like, you know, if the House thing is like the grand jury, the Senate is more like the judge and the trial, the jurors, and they present evidence to decide whether to remove the individual who's been impeached. So that's the process where we are right now. And so the House vote doesn't mean anything in terms of in terms of the outcome, but it does mean that the process will now move to the Texas Senate, and they are trying to get moving as quickly as they can in the Senate to hold the trial. And that is a trial where they have to set, there's a process, you have to set the rules for the trial, you have to have, and that is being created by a small committee. They've got to decide, you know, who can testify, how much testimony, all of that stuff. So that's the process where we are. This coming Thursday, I have Texas State Senator Bob Hall joining me for our Thursday show, full hour in studio audience. He's going to be joining me. I will tell you right now, he is not permitted, he nor anyone else who's a member of the Senate is permitted to discuss this case in any way, just like you can't talk to a juror. If a person tells you, hey, I got a call for jury duty, and I'm on a jury, you know, in a murder trial, you know the judge has instructed the jury, don't talk about this case with anyone. It's the same principle applies to the Texas State Senate. That's where we are. So Bob Hall will be on Thursday, Senator Bob Hall, to talk really about this last session in the Texas State House, which has been extraordinary to beat the ban. You won't believe all the stuff that happened. But on the subject of Ken Paxton, I want to run through some top-level analysis of it, and then we'll talk about it more later. What is really happening in the great state of Texas? Because it is true, in Texas, we have Republican majority in the House, Republican majority in the Senate, Republican governor, Republican Attorney General Ken Paxton, and Republican Lieutenant Governor, who's also the head of the Senate, Dan Patrick. They're all Republicans. And so it made a lot of national news, people saying, wow, if a Republican majority House could impeach a guy who is Republican Attorney General, he probably really did something wrong. That is the kind of kindergarten level takeaway if you just read headlines. And I want to disabuse you of some of those notions. I should say, by the way, the one difference between Texas procedure and U.S. procedure is that now that the House has made that impeachment vote, at least temporarily, Attorney General Paxton is not our Attorney General. He stepped away from that seat, and if needed, the governor can appoint a temporary replacement. So that's the only difference in procedure. Here's the bottom line, top line way to look at it. This is simply a battle between the grassroots and the establishment people in our state. And it's the same battle happening across America in Republican parties and maybe the Democrat side, I don't know. But the Republican side, it's an endless tug of war. It's the grassroots versus the elected. It is the ruling elite establishment versus the voters and the grassroots. That is the distinction. It's not a Republican-Democrat issue. It is a concept of the idea that our party is not always on the same page. Many grassroots people in Texas are trying to have their voices heard. They are outraged by this. So this is not, so that is the high level thing. It is not, it's grassroots versus a ruling elite trying to tell you, we don't care what you think and we don't care who you voted for, we'll decide for you. One big factor to keep in mind, and you must understand that, there is a Texas state statute. It is law in the state of Texas. Amelia, I'm gonna have you put this up in just a second. a Texas state statute that says no public official may be impeached for any actions taken prior to his most recent election. So quick, put that up there so you can see. This is what the Texas state law says. And actually that is, okay, there's another one, the mini version that it has just that middle piece. Okay, the general, and so this is making reference to it. This is one of the Texas state House members who voted against impeachment. And she, in part of her explanation for why she voted against impeachment, she included this paragraph. The General Investigating Committee stated in its May 26, 2023 memorandum to the House that but for Paxton's own request for a taxpayer-funded settlement over his wrongful conduct, Paxton would not be facing impeachment. Paxton would not be facing impeachment by the House. And so the relevance of that is that the Texas state law says he cannot be impeached for anything that happened prior to his most recent election. And everything the Texas House looked into and reported on and based their impeachment decision on, the articles of impeachment, involved things that happened before he was most recently elected. In other words, they are misusing Texas law, and let me just add, and they know it. They all know it. They all understand that everything that they put into impeaching Ken Paxton, Attorney General Paxton, were things that occurred prior to his most recent election. Just so you know, Ken Paxton has been around Texas state politics for a while. He served in the Texas State House, you know, the Texas State House from 2003 till 2013. He served in the Texas Senate, elected overwhelmingly every time, elected in the Texas State Senate in 2013. Then he was elected Attorney General in Texas. Attorney General, he's elected in 2014, again in 2018, and again in 2022. So he's been elected popularly over and over and over and over. When he first ran for Texas State Senate, when he first ran for Attorney General, there was a primary that year. It was 2014, a primary that involved Ken Paxton running for Attorney General, and his opponent was a guy named Dan Branch. Both were members of the Texas legislature. Dan was a Texas House guy, Paxton was a Texas senator, and they both ran for Attorney General in a primary. And in that primary, the establishment Republicans got behind Dan Branch, who's a nice guy. He's a nice guy, he's got a nice wife, five kids, total establishment guy. Ken Paxton ran as a grassroots Republican. Ken Paxton overwhelmingly won. Dan Branch picked out certain things that he pointed to in Ken Paxton's conduct of his time in the House and the Senate, saying, well, you know, these things were not right. They were unethical. You shouldn't have done this. You should have done this. And the Texas voters looked at what Dan Branch had to say, and it didn't sway them. Whether they did or did not agree with whatever Dan Branch was raising, it didn't sway them. Same thing happened when, he won overwhelmingly. Ken Paxton won both the Attorney General seat, elected again in 2018, elected again in 2022. And during the time he served as Attorney General, there have been numerous issues that were raised by various people working in his office. Relitigating those, I covered those at the time this was happening, but relitigating those is absolutely irrelevant. It is because the Texas law says you don't impeach somebody over things that occurred prior to their last election. And the reason, which is most obvious, but the legislative purpose is to say, if the Texas voters knew about this, they knew about whatever your complaint or criticism is, and they decided, well, even if that's true, or it's true or isn't true, we want what he's going to do for Texas. We want this guy because he's a fighter, because he's conservative, because he's strong, because he stands for the things we care about. And so the statute there to say, you in the Texas House, in the Texas Senate, your job is not to relitigate, to rethink what the Texas voters already knew about. They already knew everything that is in this impeachment debacle document. And the Texas voters said, either they said, I don't believe those accusations against him, I don't think he did anything wrong, or even if I think I don't like some things he did, I still want him for Attorney General because he's the one who will stand for my values. So that's the first point to understand. the impeachment itself appears to be utterly, completely unlawful. Nothing new was brought up. And that was, put that thing up again, that second little skinny slide. This is a woman, a member of the Texas State Rep, the Texas State House, who put this up in her explanation for why she could not vote for impeachment. She's saying every dang thing you all, this impeachment committee, put in this impeachment articles happened before the last election, because they admit it. They say we wouldn't even be looking at his conduct. We wouldn't even be looking at this case, except for the fact that he submitted a request to the Texas State Legislature to reimburse him. As to that, we can come back to me now. There was a request submitted by Attorney General Paxton to the Texas State Senate and House, the legislature, to be reimbursed for a litigation settlement fee. He settled litigation with some people in his office. It's like $3.3 million. And so I will tell you that I hear from various Texas State Senators, Texas State Reps, who are basically making the argument, well, that opened the whole thing up. No, it didn't. They could have said, you know, we can't pay that because we think it's unjustified. They could just say no. But instead, they decided to form a committee months ago, this past March, months ago, they formed a committee to look into everything in Attorney General Paxton's history in life and came up with these things they're saying justify. So whether you as an individual voter might have said, you know, well, maybe this would have changed my mind. The fact is, the law says they can't do this. And I'm telling you people, so it matters, they know it. And so it leads me to the next point I want to make regarding how we got here. So we have in Texas, you might think, everyone thinks, Texas is so conservative. Let me just put up, this is clip 4. I just want to show you one thing about what happens in the Texas legislature. In the Texas legislature, we have a Speaker of the House named Dade Phelan, or ringleader, whatever you want to call him. He has an R by his name. He's a Republican Speaker of the House. And so you understand how he got there. He didn't get there because the Republican majority picked him. He did not. He got all the Democrats, the minority party Democrats, came to him and said, we'll back you for Speaker in the House, even though we're Democrats. They get concessions from him, and you just got to pick off, I think it was like 12 Republicans to get with you, to get behind you, and you can be Speaker. And so they find 12 Republicans they can pick off to join the Democrats. And so it's really a Democrat-chosen Speaker of the House. Dade Phelan has more money than anyone could possibly imagine and to dole out. So this list you're looking at, this is the thousands and tens of thousands of dollars given to Texas State Rep candidates to help them in their campaigns, to help them win. And shockingly, it appears that all or virtually all the people who got money from Dade Phelan went along with a Dade Phelan-initiated effort to take out Ken Paxton. Now, I will say there may be people in this list who actually don't understand what the law says, or that they aren't supposed to impeach for things prior to the election, or they are so overwhelmed they can't understand anything. I don't know if money's the only motive, but I do know that these people all got money from him, and they all voted the way that Dade Phelan pushed him. You can come back to me now. And the other reason I'm telling you all this is because it sets a dangerous precedent in Texas, because it's basically saying the voters can decide. The voters can decide who they stand with, who they want to be in the very important position of Attorney General. But if the establishment majority in the Texas House and Senate don't like him, they'll just take him out anyway. They're not just hurting Ken Paxton. They're hurting the voting base in Texas who chose him. And his opponent, by the way, his primary opponent in the primary, Ken Paxton's primary opponent, was a guy named George P. Bush, who is a Bush family legacy, and the voters in Texas just roundly rejected him, did not want him. They don't want any more Bushes because they're too establishment. They didn't want him. And that's what the message of the voters was, is if that's my choice, I'm going to stick with Ken Paxton. So I want to tell you something else that's occurred. There's been statements put out by the Texas State GOP chair, happens to be a good friend of mine. Did I say the Matt Rinaldi statement? Did I send you that? Yeah, okay. Yeah, clip 3. Okay, this is a lengthy statement, but I'm just going to tell you that Matt Rinaldi is the chair of the Texas GOP, and he therefore, you'd think, well, he's GOP, he's supposed to be on everybody's side, But he, along with countless other Texas state GOP chairs and counties, are weighing in and saying this is out of control. This is wrong. Dade Phelan runs the Texas House as though it is is Democrat controlled. He gives Democrat control to key leadership, to key committee leaderships. He lets Democrats run them. He has allowed the Democrats to quash many items on the Republican agenda. And this is really brave of Matt Rinaldi. He's a great state chair because he just says what he's with the grassroots. He says what the grassroots think. I'm going to go into much more detail tomorrow because I think I'm past out of time. Anyway, we're good. Okay. But I do want to tell you that one other thing I want to talk about tomorrow is because you might be thinking, I was talking to my really good Republican friend in New York, where I grew up, over the weekend, and she was saying, well, if all that is true, he's so great, why are they driving him out? Like, what would drive the Republicans in the Texas House to vote for impeachment? And I'm going to tell you, what Ken Paxton does in the litigation he brings, in the lawsuits he brings, he attacks the untouchable sacred cows that the Uniparty love. He does. He is not beholden to the ruling class GOP establishment rules that say what you can talk about and what you can't. So he brought the litigation to the Supreme Court of the United States challenging election integrity when the election was stolen from Donald Trump in 2020. He brought a beautiful piece of litigation. The Supreme Court, in my view, wrongly decided he didn't have standing and dismissed the suit. But he has been a leader. Ken Paxton's been a leader in uniting attorneys general around this country in conservative efforts to bring important issues to the courts, to the attention of the public. And he doesn't really play by the establishment game. He attacks their sacred cows, one being, in my view, a recent effort he's made to expose the pharmaceutical companies, the big pharma companies that inflicted so much damage on the people of Texas through the COVID-19 vaccines. He is trying to bring responsibility to those big pharma, especially Pfizer, but big pharma officials, basically just saying, you knew the vaccines were dangerous and you kept pushing them on the people of Texas. There are many people in the Texas legislature who receive directly or indirectly donations from Big Pharma, and they do not want Big Pharma attacked. I don't know who all is behind this effort to take out Ken Paxton, because I did hear from a lot of people over the weekend with various theories, but I do know, without question, he is the attorney general the people chose. They chose understanding all of the items that are mentioned in the articles of impeachment. They back him because he stands up for the values of the Texas people, for the grassroots, and they don't want him removed. So the issue now goes to the Senate. I don't know what's going to happen there. We'll have to wait and see. I hope the Texas Senate can move quickly, because this is really, it's not so much a stain on Ken Paxton as is a stain on the people of Texas. It is taking away their right to choose their attorney general. It's really a stain on the process in Texas and on the Texas legislature for having gone along with what I think is such a sham. Okay, I close the show every day by telling you why the stories we talked about today matter to you. So we start our show today talking about justice under tyranny, 3-year anniversary of the BLM riots in Washington, D.C., armed violence, billions in property damage, destruction, multiple deaths and injuries, a true insurrection, but zero prosecutions by the D.C. District Attorney of BLM rioters and relentless prosecution of J6 unlawful paraders. It is impossible to reconcile the behavior of the D.C. prosecutors with anything remotely resembling justice based on truth, honesty, and fairness. This is unsustainable in America. Yet, the D.C. crowd marches on with plans for more censorship and control of free speech. Leftists everywhere abusing the civil legal system to silence political opposition. The American meaning of rule of law and free speech must be relearned ASAP. And on Texas Attorney General Paxton impeachment travesty, more on this story, I hope tomorrow or later in the week, but for now. Paxton has always been popular with the people, unpopular with the GOP establishment. Paxton has used the Attorney General's office to take on cases the GOPE would rather he didn't. Election fraud challenge all the way to the Supreme Court. Fraud challenge to Big Pharma. Safe and effective claims on COVID vaccines. A Texas statute explicitly prohibits impeachment for actions taken prior to election, effectively holds that the people's choice in an election cannot be undone by the ruling class. The impeachment of Paxton appears based entirely on actions prior to the 2022 election. Invalid grounds for impeachment and bizarre ambush timing, meaning the people of Texas had no idea it was coming till a week ago, even though Paxton's office apparently did in March, and the history of the GOPE hostility. Paxton impeachment reeks of ruling class elitism and hardball tactics. Texas Senate should throw it out based on Texas statute alone. And that, my very fine friends, is America Can We Talk for today. Thank you so very much for tuning in to America Can We Talk every Monday through Thursday at 3 p.m. Central Time. I do this show to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.